This is Down to Sleep, my weekly podcast of softly spoken stories. Available everywhere you get podcasts, so wherever you're listening, please drop a follow and a positive review to help this podcast grow. If you don't want to wait to hear the rest of this book, it is available from start to finish right now on my Patreon, which is the main version of this podcast. There, episodes go out twice a week, so we get quite far ahead with the books, including exclusive readings like Howl's Moving Castle. There are more than 250 episodes right now at patreon.com/downtosleep. You can also find my YouTube and Instagram in the description box for this podcast. For now, let's tuck you in. Take a nice deep breath for me, and let's get down to sleep. When I woke to the pearl-gray morning, my mood was blissful. The tense evening with Billy and Jacob seemed harmless enough now. I decided to forget it completely. I caught myself whistling while I was pulling the front part of my hair back into a barrette, and later again as I skipped down the stairs. Charlie noticed. "You're cheerful this morning," he commented over breakfast. I shrugged. "It's Friday." I hurried, so I would be ready to go the second Charlie left. I had my bag ready, shoes on, teeth brushed, but even though I rushed to the door as soon as I was sure Charlie would be out of sight, Edward was faster. He was waiting in his shiny car, windows down, engine off. I didn't hesitate this time, climbing in the passenger side quickly, the sooner to see his face. He grinned his crooked smile at me, stopping my breath and my heart. I couldn't imagine how an angel could be any more glorious. There was nothing about him that could be improved upon. "How did you sleep?" he asked. I wondered if he had any idea how appealing his voice was. "Fine. How was your night?" "Pleasant." His smile was amused. I felt like I was missing an inside joke. "Can I ask what you did?" I asked. "No," he grinned. "Today is still mine." He wanted to know about people today. More about Renee, her hobbies, what we'd done in our free time together. And then the one grandmother I'd known, my few school friends, embarrassing me when he asked about boys I'd dated. I was relieved that I'd never really dated anyone, so that particular conversation couldn't last long. He seemed as surprised as Jessica and Angela by my lack of romantic history. "So you never met anyone you wanted?" he asked in a serious tone that made me wonder what he was thinking about. I was grudgingly honest. "Not in Phoenix." His lips pressed together into a hard line. We were in the cafeteria at this point. The day had sped by in the blur that was rapidly becoming routine. I took advantage of his brief pause to take a bite of my bagel. "I should have let you drive yourself today," he announced, apropos of nothing, while I chewed. "Why?" I demanded. "I'm leaving with Alice after lunch." "Oh," I blinked, bewildered and disappointed. "That's okay, it's not that far of a walk." He frowned at me, impatiently. "I'm not going to make you walk home. We'll go get your truck and leave it here for you." "I don't have my key with me," I sighed. "I really don't mind walking." What I minded was losing my time with him. He shook his head. "Your truck will be here, and the key will be in the ignition. Unless you're afraid someone might steal it." He laughed at the thought. "All right," I agreed, pursing my lips. I was pretty sure my key was in the pocket of a pair of jeans I wore Wednesday, under a pile of clothes in the laundry room. Even if he broke into my house, or whatever he was planning, he'd never find it. He seemed to feel the challenge in my consent. He smirked, overconfident. "So, where are you going?" I asked as casually as I could manage. "Hunting," he answered grimly. "If I'm going to be alone with you tomorrow, I'm going to take whatever precautions I can." His face grew morose and pleading. "You can always cancel, you know." I looked down, afraid of the persuasive power of his eyes. I refused to be convinced to fear him, no matter how real the danger might be. "It doesn't matter," I repeated in my head. "No," I whispered, glancing back at his face. "I can't." "Perhaps you're right," he murmured bleakly. His eyes seemed to darken in color as I watched. I changed the subject. "What time will I see you tomorrow?" I asked, already depressed by the thought of him leaving now. "That depends. It's a Saturday. Don't you want to sleep in?" he offered. "No," I answered too fast. He restrained a smile. "The same time as usual, then," he decided. "Will Charlie be there?" "No, he's fishing tomorrow." I beamed at the memory of how conveniently things had worked out. His voice turned sharp. "And if you don't come home, what will he think?" "I have no idea," I answered coolly. "He knows I've been meaning to do the laundry. Maybe he'll think I fell in the washer." He scowled at me, and I scowled back. His anger was much more impressive than mine. "What are you hunting tonight?" I asked when I was sure I had lost the glowering contest. "Whatever we find in the park. We aren't going far." He seemed bemused by my casual reference to his secret realities. "Why are you going with Alice?" I wondered. "Alice is the most supportive." He frowned as he spoke. "And the others?" I asked timidly. "What are they?" His brow puckered for a brief moment. "Incredulous, for the most part." I peeked quickly behind me at his family. They sat staring off in different directions, exactly the same as the first time I'd seen them. Only now, they were four. Their beautiful, bronze-haired brother sat across from me, his golden eyes troubled. "They don't like me," I guessed. "That's not it," he disagreed, but his eyes were too innocent. "They don't understand why I can't leave you alone." I grimaced. "Neither do I, for that matter." Edward shook his head slowly, rolling his eyes toward the ceiling before he met my gaze again. "I told you. You don't see yourself clearly, at all. You're not like anyone I've ever known. You fascinate me." I glared at him, sure he was teasing now. He smiled as he deciphered my expression. "Having the advantages I do," he murmured, touching his forehead discreetly. "I have a better than average grasp of human nature. People are predictable. But you never do what I expect. You always take me by surprise." I looked away, my eyes wandering back to his family, embarrassed and dissatisfied. His words made me feel like a science experiment. I wanted to laugh at myself for expecting anything else. "That part is easy enough to explain," he continued. I felt his eyes on my face, but I couldn't look at him yet, afraid he might read the chagrin in my eyes. "But there's more, and it's not so easy to put into words." I was still staring at the Cullens while he spoke. Suddenly, Rosalie, his blonde and breathtaking sister, turned to look at me. No, not to look, to glare with dark, cold eyes. I wanted to look away, but her gaze held me until Edward broke off mid-sentence and made an angry noise under his breath. It was almost a hiss. Rosalie turned her head, and I was relieved to be free. I looked back at Edward. I knew he could see the confusion and fear that widened my eyes. His face was tight as he explained. "I'm sorry about that. She's just worried. You see, it's dangerous for more than just me if, after spending so much time with you so publicly..." He looks down. If this ends badly..." He dropped his head into his hands, as he had that night in Port Angeles. His anguish was plain. I yearned to comfort him, but I was at a loss to know how. My hand reached toward him involuntarily. Quickly, though, I dropped it to the table, fearing that my touch would only make things worse. I realized slowly that his words should frighten me. I waited for that fear to come, but all I could seem to feel was an ache for his pain and frustration. Frustration that Rosalie had interrupted whatever he was about to say. I didn't know how to bring it up again. He still had his head in his hands. I tried to speak in a normal voice. "And you have to leave now?" "Yes." He raised his face. It was serious for a moment. Then his mood shifted, and he smiled. "It's probably for the best. We still have 15 minutes of that wretched movie left to endure in biology. I don't think I could take any more." I started. Alice, her short, inky hair in a halo of spiky disarray around her exquisite elfin face, was suddenly standing behind his shoulder. Her slight frame was willowy, graceful, even in absolute stillness. He greeted her without looking away from me. "Alice." "Edward," she answered, her high soprano voice almost as attractive as his. "Alice, Bella, Bella, Alice," he introduced us, gesturing casually with his hand, a wry smile on his face. "Hello, Bella." Her brilliant obsidian eyes were unreadable, but her smile was friendly. "It's nice to finally meet you." Edward flashed a dark look at her. "Hi, Alice," I murmured shyly. "Are you ready?" she asked him. His voice was aloof. "Nearly. I'll meet you at the car." She left without another word. Her walk was so fluid, so sinuous, that I felt a sharp pang of jealousy. "Should I say have fun, or is that the wrong sentiment?" I asked, turning back to him. "No, have fun works as well as anything," he grinned. "Have fun, then," I worked to sound wholehearted. Of course, I didn't fool him. "I'll try," he still grinned. "And you, try to be safe, please." Safe in Forks, what a challenge. "For you, it is a challenge." His jaw hardened. "Promise." "I promise to try to be safe," I recited. "I'll do the laundry tonight. That ought to be fraught with peril." "Don't fall in," he mocked. "I'll do my best." He stood then, and I rose too. "I'll see you tomorrow," I sighed. "Seems like a long time to you, doesn't it?" he mused. I nodded glumly. "I'll be there in the morning, he promised, smiling his crooked smile. He reached across the table to touch my face, lightly brushing along my cheekbone again. Then he turned and walked away. I stared after him until he was gone. I was sorely tempted to ditch the rest of the day, at the very least, Jim. But a warning instinct stopped me. I knew that if I disappeared now, Mike and others would assume I was with Edward, and Edward was worried about the time we'd spent together publicly. If things went wrong, I refused to dwell on the last thought, concentrating instead on making things safer for him. I intuitively knew, and sensed he did too, that tomorrow would be pivotal. Our relationship couldn't continue to balance as it did on the point of a knife. We would fall off one edge or the other, depending entirely upon his decision or his instincts. My decision was made before I had ever consciously chosen, and I was committed to seeing it through. Because there was nothing more terrifying to me, more excruciating, than the thought of turning away from him. It was an impossibility. I went to class, feeling dutiful. I couldn't honestly say what happened in biology. My mind was too preoccupied with thoughts of tomorrow. In gym, Mike was speaking to me again. He wished me a good time in Seattle. I carefully explained that I'd cancelled my trip, worried about my truck. "Are you going to the dance with Cullen?" he asked, suddenly sulky. "No, I'm not going to the dance at all." "What are you doing then?" he asked, too interested. My natural urge was to tell him to butt out. Instead, I lied, brightly. "Laundry. And then I have to study for the trig test or I'm gonna fail." "Is Cullen helping you study?" "Edward," I emphasized, "is not going to help me study. He's gone away somewhere for the weekend." The lies came more naturally than usual, I noted with surprise. "Oh," he perked up. "You know, you could come to the dance with our group anyway. That would be cool. We'd all dance with you," he promised. The mental image of Jessica's face made my tone sharper than necessary. "I'm not going to the dance, Mike. Okay?" "Fine," he sulked again. "I was just offering." When the school day had finally ended, I walked to the parking lot without enthusiasm. I did not especially want to walk home, but I couldn't see how he would have retrieved my truck. Then again, I was starting to believe that nothing was impossible for him. The latter instinct proved correct. My truck sat in the same space he had parked his Volvo in this morning. I shook my head, incredulous, as I opened the unlocked door and saw the key in the ignition. There was a piece of white paper folded on my seat. I got in and closed the door before I unfolded it. Two words were written in his elegant script. "Be safe." The sound of the truck roaring to life frightened me. I laughed at myself. When I got home, the handle of the door was locked, the deadbolt unlocked, just as I had left it this morning. Inside, I went straight to the laundry room. It looked just the same as I had left it. I dug for my jeans and, after finding them, checked the pockets. Empty. Maybe I'd hung my key up after all, I thought, shaking my head. following the same instinct that had prompted me to lie to Mike, I called Jessica, on the pretense of wishing her luck at the dance. When she offered the same wish for my day with Edward, I told her about the cancellation. She was more disappointed than really necessary for a third-party observer to be. I said goodbye quickly after that. Charlie was absent-minded at dinner, worried over something at work, I guess, or maybe a basketball game. Maybe he was just really enjoying the lasagna. It was hard to tell with Charlie. You know, Dad, I began, breaking into his reverie. What's that, Belle? I think you're right about Seattle. I think I'll wait until Jessica or someone else can go with me. Oh, he said, surprised. Oh, okay. So do you want me to stay home? No, Dad, don't change your plans. I've got a million things to do. Homework, laundry. I need to go to the library and the grocery store. I'll be in and out all day. You go and have fun. Are you sure? Absolutely, Dad. Besides, the freeze is getting dangerously low on fish. We're down to a 2, maybe 3 year supply. You're sure easy to live with, Bella, he smiled. I could say the same thing about you, I said, laughing. The sound of my laughter was off, but he didn't seem to notice. I felt so guilty for deceiving him that I almost took Edward's advice and told him where I would be. Almost. After dinner, I folded clothes and moved another load through the dryer. Unfortunately, it was the kind of job that only keeps hands busy. My mind definitely had too much free time, and it was getting out of control. I fluctuated between anticipation so intense that it was very nearly pain, and an insidious fear that picked at my resolve. I had to keep reminding myself that I'd made my choice, and I wasn't going back on it. I pulled his note out of my pocket much more often than necessary to absorb the 2 small words he'd written. He wants me to be safe, I told myself again and again. I would just hold on to the faith that, in the end, that desire would win out over the others. And what was my other choice? To cut him out of my life? Intolerable. Besides, since I'd come to Forks, it really seemed like my life was about him. But a tiny voice in the back of my mind worried, wondering if it would hurt very much, if it ended badly. I was relieved when it was late enough to be acceptable for bedtime. I knew I was far too stressed to sleep, so I did something I'd never done before. I deliberately took unnecessary cold medicine, the kind that knocked me out for a good 8 hours. I normally wouldn't condone that type of behavior in myself, but tomorrow would be complicated enough without me being loopy from sleep deprivation on top of everything. While I waited for the drugs to kick in, I dried my clean hair till it was impeccably straight and fussed over what I would wear tomorrow. With everything ready for the morning, I finally lay in my bed. I felt hyper. I couldn't stop twitching. I got up and rifled through my shoebox of CDs until I found a collection of Chopin's nocturnes. I put that on very quietly and then lay down again, concentrating on relaxing individual parts of my body. Somewhere in the middle of that exercise, the cold pills took effect, and I gladly sank into unconsciousness. I woke early, having slept soundly and dreamlessly thanks to my gratuitous drug use. Though I was well rested, I slipped right back into the same hectic frenzy from the night before. I dressed in a rush, smoothing my collar against my neck, fidgeting with the tan sweater till it hung right over my jeans. I sneaked a swift look out the window to see that Charlie was already gone. A thin, cottony layer of clouds veiled the sky. They didn't look very lasting. I ate breakfast without tasting the food, hurrying to clean up when I was done. I peeked out the window again, but nothing had changed. I had just finished brushing my teeth and was heading back downstairs when a quiet knock sent my heart thudding against my ribcage. I flew to the door. I had a little trouble with the simple deadbolt, but I yanked the door open at last, and there he was. All the agitation dissolved as soon as I looked at his face, calm taking its place. I breathed a sigh of relief. Yesterday's fears seemed very foolish with him here. He wasn't smiling at first. His face was somber. But then his expression lightened as he looked me over and he laughed. "Good morning," he chuckled. "What's wrong?" I glanced down to make sure I hadn't forgotten anything important like shoes or pants. "We match," he laughed again. I realized he had a long, light tan sweater on, with a white collar showing underneath, and blue jeans. I laughed with him, hiding a secret twinge of regret. Why did he have to look like a runway model when I couldn't? I locked the door behind me while he walked to the truck. He waited by the passenger door, with a martyred expression that was easy to understand. "We made a deal," I reminded him smugly, climbing into the driver's seat and reaching over to unlock his door. "Where to?" I asked. "Put your seatbelt on. I'm nervous already." I gave him a dirty look as I complied. "Where to?" I repeated with a sigh. "Take the 101 north," he ordered. It was surprisingly difficult to concentrate on the road while feeling his gaze on my face. I compensated by driving more carefully than usual through the still sleeping town. "Were you planning to make it out of Forks before nightfall?" "This truck is old enough to be your car's grandfather. Have some respect," I retorted. We were soon out of the town limits, despite his negativity. Thick underbrush and green swathed trunks replaced the lawns and houses. "Turn right on the 110, he instructed, just as I was about to ask. I obeyed silently. "Now we drive till the pavement ends." I could hear a smile in his voice, but I was too afraid of driving off the road and proving him right to look over and be sure. "And what's there at pavement's end?" I wondered. "A trail." "We're hiking." Thank goodness I'd worn tennis shoes. "Is that a problem?" He sounded as if he'd expected as much. "No." I tried to make the lie sound confident. But if he thought my truck was slow. "Don't worry. It's only 5 miles or so and we're in no hurry." 5 miles. I didn't answer so that he wouldn't hear my voice crack in panic. 5 miles of treacherous roots and loose stones trying to twist my ankles or otherwise incapacitate me. This was going to be humiliating. We drove in silence for a while as I contemplated the coming horror. "What are you thinking?" he asked impatiently after a few moments. I lied again. "Just wondering where we're going." "It That's a place I like to go when the weather is nice. We both glanced out the windows at the thinning clouds after he spoke. Charlie said it would be warm today. And did you tell Charlie what you were up to? He asked. Nope. But Jessica thinks we're going to Seattle together. He seemed cheered by the idea. No. I told her you cancelled on me, which is true. No one knows you're with me. Angrily now. That depends. I assume you told Alice. That's very helpful, Bella, he snapped. I pretended I didn't hear it. Are you so depressed by Forks that it's made you suicidal? He demanded when I ignored him. You said it might cause trouble for you. Us being together publicly, I reminded. So you're worried about the trouble it might cause me if you don't come home. His voice was still angry and bitingly sarcastic. I nodded, keeping my eyes on the road. He muttered something under his breath, speaking so quickly I couldn't understand. We were silent for the rest of the drive. I could feel the waves of infuriated disapproval rolling off of him, and I could think of nothing to say. And then the road ended, constricting to a thin foot trail with a small wooden marker. I parked on the narrow shoulder and stepped out, afraid because he was angry with me and I didn't have driving as an excuse not to look at him. It was warm now, warmer than it had been in Forks since the day I'd arrived, almost muggy under the clouds. I pulled off my sweater and knotted it around my waist, glad I'd worn the light sleeveless shirt, especially if I had 5 miles of hiking ahead of me. I heard his door slam and looked over to see he'd removed his sweater too. He was facing away from me, into the unbroken forest beside my truck. This way, he said, glancing over his shoulder at me, eyes still annoyed. He started into the dark forest. The trail? Panic was clear in my voice as I hurried around the truck to catch up to him. I said there was a trail at the end of the road. Not that we were taking it. No trail? I asked desperately. I won't let you get lost. He turned then with a mocking smile, and I stifled a gasp. His white shirt was sleeveless, and he wore it unbuttoned. The smooth white skin of his throat flowed uninterrupted over the marble contours of his chest. His perfect musculature no longer merely hinted at behind concealing clothes. He was too perfect, I realized with a piercing stab of despair. There was no way this godlike creature could be meant for me. He stared at me, bewildered by my tortured expression. Do you want to go home? He said quietly, a different pain than mine saturating his voice. No. I walked forward till I was close beside him, anxious not to waste 1 second of whatever time I might have with him. What's wrong? He asked, his voice gentle. I'm not a good hiker, I answered dully. You'll have to be very patient. I can be patient, if I make a great effort. He smiled, holding my glance, trying to lift me out of my sudden, unexplained dejection. I tried to smile back, but the smile was unconvincing. He scrutinized my face. I'll take you home, he promised. I couldn't tell if the promise was unconditional or restricted to an immediate departure. I know he thought it was fear that upset me, and I was grateful again that I was the one person whose mind he couldn't hear. If you want me to hack 5 miles through the jungle before sundown, you'd better start leading the way, I said acidly. He frowned at me, struggling to understand my tone and expression. He gave up after a moment and led the way into the forest. It wasn't as hard as I had feared. The way was mostly flat, and he held the damp ferns and webs of moss aside for me. When his straight path took us over fallen trees or boulders, he would help me, lifting me by the elbow and releasing me instantly when I was clear. His cold touch on my skin never failed to make my heart thud erratically. Twice when that happened, I caught a look on his face that made me sure he could somehow hear it. I tried to keep my eyes away from his perfection as much as possible, but I slipped often. Each time, his beauty pierced me through with sadness. For the most part, we walked in silence. Occasionally, he would ask a random question that he hadn't gotten to in the past 2 days of interrogation. He asked me about my birthdays, my grade school teachers, my childhood pets. And I had to admit that after killing 3 fish in a row, I'd given up on the whole institution. He laughed at that, louder than I was used to, bell-like echoes bouncing back to us from the empty woods. The hike took me most of the morning, but he never showed any sign of impatience. The forest spread out around us in a boundless labyrinth of ancient trees, and I began to be nervous that we would never find our way out again. He was perfectly at ease, comfortable in the green maze, never seeming to feel any doubt about our direction. After several hours, the light that filtered through the canopy transformed, the murky olive tone shifting to a brighter jade. The day had turned sunny, just as he'd foretold. For the first time since we'd entered the woods, I felt a thrill of excitement, which quickly turned to impatience. Are we there yet? I teased, pretending to scowl. Nearly, he smiled at the change in my mood. Do you see the brightness ahead? I peered into the thick forest. Should I? He smirked. Maybe it's a bit too soon for your eyes. Time to visit the optometrist, I muttered. His smirk grew more pronounced. But then, after another 100 yards, I could definitely see a lightening in the trees ahead. A glow that was yellow instead of green. I picked up the pace, my eagerness growing with every step. He let me lead now, following noiselessly. I reached the edge of the pool of light and stepped through the last fringe of ferns into the loveliest place I had ever seen. The meadow was small, perfectly round, filled with wildflowers, violet, yellow, soft white. Somewhere nearby I could hear the bubbling music of a stream. The sun was directly overhead, filling the circle with a haze of buttery sunshine. I walked slowly, awestruck through the soft grass, swaying flowers, and warm, gilded air. I halfway turned, wanting to share this with him, but he wasn't behind me where I thought he'd be. I spun around with sudden alarm. Finally, I spotted him, still under the dense shade of the canopy at the edge of the hollow, watching me with cautious eyes. Only then did I remember what the beauty of the meadow had driven from my mind. The enigma of Edward and the sun which he had promised to illustrate for me today. I took a step back toward him, my eyes alight with curiosity. His eyes were wary, reluctant. I smiled encouragingly and beckoned to him with my hand. Taking another step back to him, he held up a hand in warning, and I hesitated, rocking back onto my heels. Edward seemed to take a deep breath, and then he stepped out into the bright glow of the midday sun. Edward, in the sunlight, was shocking. I couldn't get used to it, though I'd been staring at him all afternoon. His skin, white, despite the faint flush from yesterday's hunting trip, literally sparkled, like thousands of tiny diamonds were embedded in the surface. He lay perfectly still in the grass, his shirt open over his sculpted incandescent chest, his scintillating arms bare. His glistening, pale lavender lids were shut, though of course he didn't sleep. A perfect statue, carved in some unknown stone, smooth like marble, glittering like crystal. Now and then, his lips would move, so fast it looked like they were trembling. But when I asked, he told me he was singing to himself. It was too low for me to hear. I enjoyed the sun too, though the air wasn't quite dry enough for my taste. I would have liked to lie back as he did and let the sun warm my face. But I stayed curled up, my chin resting on my knees, unwilling to take my eyes off of him. The wind was gentle. It tangled my hair and ruffled the grass that swayed around his motionless form. The meadow, so spectacular to me at first, paled next to his magnificence. Hesitantly, always afraid, even now that he would disappear like a mirage too beautiful to be real. Hesitantly, I reached out one finger and stroked the back of his shimmering hand where it lay within my reach. I marveled again at the perfect texture, satin smooth, cool as stone. When I looked up again, his eyes were open, watching me. Butterscotch today, lighter, warmer after hunting. His quick smile turned up the corners of his flawless lips. "I don't scare you," he asked playfully, but I could hear the real curiosity in his soft voice. "No more than usual." He smiled wider. His teeth flashed in the sun. I inched closer, stretched out my whole hand now to trace the contours of his forearm with my fingertips. I saw that my fingers trembled and knew it wouldn't escape his notice. "Do you mind?" I asked, for he had closed his eyes again. "No," he said without opening his eyes. "You can't imagine how that feels," he sighed. I lightly trailed my hand over the perfect muscles of his arm, followed the faint pattern of bluish veins inside the crease at his elbow. With my other hand, I reached to turn his hand over. Realizing what I wished, he flipped his palm up in one of those blindingly fast, disconcerting movements of his. It startled me. My fingers froze on his arm for a brief second. "Sorry," he murmured. I looked up in time to see his golden eyes close again. "It's too easy to be myself with you." I lifted his hand, turning it this way and that as I watched the sun glitter on his palm. I held it closer to my face, trying to see the hidden facets in his skin. "Tell me what you're thinking," he whispered. I looked to see his eyes watching me, suddenly intent. It's still so strange for me, not knowing. You know, the rest of us feel that way all the time. It's a hard life. Did I imagine the hint of regret in his tone? But you didn't tell me. I was wishing I could know what you were thinking. I hesitated. And I was wishing that I could believe that you were real. I was wishing that I wasn't afraid. I don't want you to be afraid. His voice was just a soft murmur. I heard what he couldn't truthfully say. That I didn't need to be afraid. That there was nothing to fear. Well, that's not exactly the fear I meant, though. That's certainly something to think about. So quickly that I missed his movement, he was half sitting, propped up on his right arm, his left palm still in his hands. His angel's face was only a few inches from mine. I might have, should have flinched away from his unexpected closeness, but I was unable to move. His golden eyes mesmerized me. "What are you afraid of, then?" he whispered intently, but I couldn't answer, as I had just that once before. I smelled his cool breath in my face. Sweet. Delicious. The scent made my mouth water. It was unlike anything else. Instinctively, unthinkingly, I leaned closer, inhaling. And he was gone. His hand ripped from mine. In the time it took my eyes to focus, he was 20 feet away, standing at the edge of the small meadow, in the deep shade of a huge fir tree. He stared at me, his eyes dark in the shadows, his expression unreadable. I could feel the hurt and shock on my face. My empty hands stung. "I'm sorry, Edward," I whispered. I knew he could hear. "Give me a moment," he called, just loud enough for my less sensitive ears. I sat very still. After 10 incredibly long seconds, he walked back, slowly for him. He stopped, still several feet away, and sank gracefully to the ground, crossing his legs. His eyes never left mine. He took 2 deep breaths and then smiled in apology. "I am so very sorry," he hesitated. "Would you understand what I meant if I said I was only human?" I nodded once, not quite able to smile at his joke. Adrenaline pulsed through my veins as the realization of danger slowly sank in. He could smell that from where he sat. His smile turned mocking. "I'm the world's best predator, aren't I? Everything about me invites you in, my voice, my face, even my smell. As if I need any of that." Unexpectedly, he was on his feet, bounding away instantly out of sight, only to appear beneath the same tree as before, having circled the meadow in half a second. "As if you could outrun me," he laughed bitterly. He reached up with one hand and with a deafening crack, effortlessly ripped a 2-foot-thick branch from the trunk of the spruce. He balanced it in that hand for a moment, and then threw it with blinding speed, shattering it against another huge tree which shook and trembled at the blow. And he was in front of me again, standing 2 feet away, still as a stone. "As if you could fight me off," he said gently. I sat without moving, more frightened of him than I had ever been. I'd never seen him so completely freed of that carefully cultivated facade. He'd never been less human or more beautiful. Face ashen, eyes wide. I sat like a bird, locked in the eyes of a snake. his lovely eyes seemed to glow with rash excitement. Then, as the seconds passed, they dimmed. His expression slowly folded into a mask of ancient sadness. "Don't be afraid," he murmured, his velvet voice unintentionally seductive. "I promise," he hesitated. "I swear not to hurt you." He seemed more concerned with convincing himself than me. "Don't be afraid," he whispered again as he stepped closer, with exaggerated slowness. He sat sinuously with deliberately unhurried movements, till our faces were on the same level, just a foot apart. "Please, forgive me," he said formally. "I can control myself. You caught me off guard, but I'm on my best behavior now." He waited, but I still couldn't speak. "I'm not thirsty today, honestly," he winked. At that, I had to laugh, though the sound was shaky and breathless. "Are you all right?" he asked tenderly, reaching out slowly, carefully, to place his marble hand back in mine. I looked at his smooth, cold hand, and then at his eyes. They were soft, repentant. I looked back at his hand and then deliberately returned to tracing the lines in his hand with my fingertip. I looked up and smiled timidly. His answering smile was dazzling. "So where were we before I behaved so rudely?" he asked in the gentle cadences of an earlier century. "I honestly can't remember." He smiled, but his face was ashamed. "I think we were talking about why you were afraid, besides the obvious reason." "Oh, right. Well?" I looked down at his hand and doodled aimlessly across his smooth, iridescent palm. The seconds ticked by. "How easily frustrated I am," he sighed. I looked into his eyes, abruptly gasping that this was every bit as new to him as it was to me. As many years of unfathomable experience as he had, this was hard for him too. I took courage from that thought.
"I was afraid because, for obvious reasons, I can't stay with you. And I'm afraid that I'd like to stay with you. Much more than I should." I looked down at his hands as I spoke. It was difficult for me to say this aloud. "Yes," he agreed slowly. "That is something to be afraid of indeed. Wanting to be with me. That's really not in your best interest." I frowned. "I should have left long ago," he sighed. "I should leave now. But I don't know if I can." "I don't want you to leave," I mumbled pathetically, staring down again. "Which is exactly why I should. But don't worry. I'm essentially a selfish creature. I crave your company too much to do what I should." "I'm glad. Don't be." He withdrew his hand, more gently this time. His voice was harsher than usual. Harsh for him. Still more beautiful than any human voice. It was hard to keep up. His sudden mood changes left me always a step behind, dazed. "It's not only your company I crave. Never forget that. Never forget I am more dangerous to you than I am to anyone else." He stopped and I looked to see him gazing unseeingly into the forest. I thought for a moment. "I don't think I understand exactly what you mean. By that last part anyway," I said. He looked back at me and smiled. his mood shifting again. How do I explain? He mused. Without frightening you again. Without seeming to think about it, he placed his hand back in mine. I held it tightly in both of mine. He looked at our hands. That's amazingly pleasant. The warmth, he sighed. A moment passed as he assembled his thoughts. You know how everyone enjoys different flavors, he began. Some people love chocolate ice cream. Others prefer strawberry. I nodded. Sorry about the food analogy, I couldn't think of another way to explain. I smiled, he smiled ruefully back. You see, every person smells different, has a different essence. If you locked an alcoholic in a room full of stale beer, he'll gladly drink it. But he could resist, if he wished to, if he were a recovering alcoholic. Now let's say you placed in that room a glass of 100-year-old brandy, the rarest, finest cognac, and filled the room with its warm aroma. How do you think he would fare then? We sat silently looking into each other's eyes, trying to read each other's thoughts. He broke the silence first. Maybe that's not the right comparison. Maybe it would be too easy to turn down the brandy. Perhaps I should have made our alcoholic a heroin addict instead. So, what you're saying is, I'm your brand of heroin? I teased, trying to lighten the mood. He smiled, swiftly, seeming to appreciate my effort. Yes, you are exactly my brand of heroin. Does that happen often? I asked. He looked across the treetops, thinking through his response. I spoke to my brothers about it. He still stared into the distance. To Jasper, every one of you is much the same. He's the most recent to join our family. It's a struggle for him to abstain at all. He hasn't had time to grow sensitive to the differences in smell, in flavor. He glanced swiftly at me, his expression apologetic. Sorry, he said. I don't mind. Please don't worry about offending me or frightening me or whichever. That's the way you think. I can understand, or I can try to at least. Just explain however you can. He took a deep breath and gazed at the sky again. So, Jasper wasn't sure if he'd ever come across someone who was as... He hesitated, looking for the right word. Appealing, as you are to me. Which makes me think not. Emmett's been on the wagon longer, so to speak, and he understood what I meant. He says twice for him, once stronger than the other. And for you? Never. The word hung there for a moment in the warm breeze. What did Emmett do? I asked to break the silence. It was the wrong question to ask. His face grew dark. His hand clenched into a fist inside mine. He looked away. I waited, but he wasn't going to answer. I guess I know, I finally said. He lifted his eyes. His expression was wistful, pleading. Even the strongest of us fall off the wagon, don't we? What are you asking? My permission? My voice was sharper than I'd intended. I tried to make my tone kinder. I could guess what his honesty must cost him. I mean, is there no hope, then? How calmly I could discuss my own death. No, no. He was instantly contrite. Of course there's hope. I mean, of course I won't. He left the sentence hanging. His eyes burned into mine. It's different for us. Emmett. These were strangers he happened across. It was a long time ago, and he wasn't as practiced, as careful as he is now. He fell silent and watched me intently as I thought it through. So, if we had met in a dark alley or something? I trailed off. It took everything I had not to jump up in the middle of that class full of children and... He stopped abruptly, looking away. When you walked past me, I could have ruined everything Carlyle has built for us, right then and there. If I hadn't been denying my thirst for the last, well, too many years, I wouldn't have been able to stop myself. He paused, scowling at the trees. He glanced at me, grimly. Both of us remembering. You must have thought I was possessed. I couldn't understand why, how you could hate me so quickly. To me, it was like you were some kind of demon, summoned straight from my own personal hell to ruin me. The fragrance coming off your skin. I thought it would make me deranged that first day. In that 1 hour, I thought of 100 different ways to lure you from the room with me, to get you alone. And I fought them each back, thinking of my family, what I could do to them. I had to run out to get away before I could speak the words that would make you follow. He looked up then at my staggered expression as I tried to absorb his bitter memories. His golden eyes scorched from under his lashes, hypnotic and deadly. You would have come, he promised. I tried to speak calmly. Without a doubt. He frowned down at my hands, releasing me from the force of his stare. And then, as I tried to rearrange my schedule, in a pointless attempt to avoid you. You were there. In that close, warm little room. The scent was maddening. I so very nearly took you then. There was only one other frail human there so easily dealt with. I shivered in the warm sun, seeing my memories anew through his eyes. Only now grasping the danger. Poor Miss Cope. I shivered again at how close I'd come to being inadvertently responsible for her death. But I resisted. I don't know how. I forced myself not to wait for you, not to follow you from the school. It was easier outside, when I couldn't smell you anymore. To think clearly, to make the right decision. I left the others near home. I was too ashamed to tell them how weak I was. They only knew something was very wrong. Then I went straight to Carlyle, at the hospital, to tell him I was leaving. I stared in surprise. I traded cars with him. He had a full tank of gas, and I didn't want to stop. I didn't dare to go home to face Esme. She wouldn't have let me go without a scene. She would have tried to convince me that it wasn't necessary. By the next morning, I was in Alaska. He sounded ashamed, as if admitting a great cowardice. I spent 2 days there with some old acquaintances. But I was homesick. I hated knowing I'd upset Esme and the rest of them, my adopted family. In the pure air of the mountains, it was hard to believe you were so resistible. I convinced myself it was weak to run away. I'd dealt with temptation before. Not of this magnitude, not even close, but I was strong. Who are you? An insignificant little girl. He grinned suddenly. To chase me from the place I wanted to be. So I came back. He stared off into space. I couldn't speak. I took precautions. Hunting, feeding more than usual before seeing you again. I was sure that I was strong enough to treat you like any other human. I was arrogant about it. It was unquestionably a complication that I couldn't simply read your thoughts to know what your reaction was to me. I wasn't used to having to go to such circuitous measures, listening to your words in Jessica's mind. Her mind isn't very original, and it was annoying to have to stoop to that. And then I couldn't know if you really meant what you said. It was all extremely irritating. He frowned at the memory. I wanted you to forget my behavior that first day, if possible. So I tried to talk with you like I would with any person. I was eager, actually, hoping to decipher some of your thoughts. But you were too interesting. I found myself caught up in your expressions. And every now and then you would stir the air with your hand or your hair, and the scent would stun me again. Of course, then you were nearly crushed to death in front of my eyes. Later, I thought of a perfectly good excuse for why I acted at that moment. Because if I hadn't saved you, if your blood had been spilled there in front of me, I don't think I could have stopped myself from exposing us for what we are. But I only thought of that excuse later. At the time, all I could think was, not her. He closed his eyes, lost in his agonized confession. I listened, more eager than rational. Common sense told me I should be terrified. Instead, I was relieved to finally understand. I was filled with compassion for his suffering. Even now, as he confessed his craving to take my life. I finally was able to speak, though my voice was faint. In the hospital? His eyes flashed up to mine. I was appalled. I couldn't believe I had put us in danger after all. Put myself in your power. You of all people. As if I needed another motive to kill you. We both flinched as that word slipped out. But it had the opposite effect, he continued quickly. I fought with Rosalie, Emmett, and Jasper when they suggested that now was the time. The worst fight we've ever had. Carlyle sided with me, and Alice. He grimaced when he said her name. I couldn't imagine why. Esme told me to do whatever I had to do in order to stay. He shook his head indulgently. All that next day, I eavesdropped on the minds of everyone you spoke to, shocked that you kept your word. I didn't understand you at all, but I knew that I couldn't become more involved with you. I did my very best to stay as far from you as possible. And every day, the perfume of your skin, your breath, your hair. It hit me as hard as the very first day. He met my eyes again, and they were surprisingly tender. And for all that, he continued, I'd have fared better if I had exposed us all that first moment, than if now, here, with no witnesses, nothing to stop me, I were to hurt you. I was human enough to have to ask. Why? Isabella, He pronounced my full name carefully, then playfully ruffled my hair with his free hand. A shock ran through my body at his casual touch. Bella, I couldn't live with myself if I ever hurt you. You don't know how it's tortured me. He looked down, ashamed again. The thought of you, still, white, cold. To never see you blush scarlet again. To never see that flash of intuition in your eyes when you see through my pretenses. It would be unendurable. He lifted his glorious, agonized eyes to mine. You are the most important thing to me now. The most important thing to me ever. My head was spinning at the rapid change in direction our conversation had taken. From the cheerful topic of my impending demise, we were suddenly declaring ourselves. He waited, and even though I looked down to study our hands between us, I knew his golden eyes were on me. You already know how I feel, of course, I finally said. I'm here, which roughly translated means I would rather die than stay away from you. I frowned. I'm an idiot. You are an idiot, he agreed with a laugh. Our eyes met, and I laughed too. We laughed, together, at the idiocy and sheer impossibility of such a moment. And so the lion fell in love with the lamb, he murmured. I looked away, hiding my eyes as I thrilled to the word. What a stupid lamb, I sighed. What a sick, masochistic lion. He stared into the shadowy forest for a long moment. I wondered where his thoughts had taken him. Why? I began and then paused, not sure how to continue. He looked at me and smiled. Sunlight glinted off his face, his teeth. Yes? Tell me why you ran from me before. His smile faded. You know why. No, I mean, exactly. What did I do wrong? I'll have to be on my guard, you see, so I better start learning what I shouldn't do. This, for example, I stroked the back of his hand. Seems to be all right. He smiled again. You didn't do anything wrong, Bella. It was my fault. But I want to help, if I can, to not make this harder for you. Well, he contemplated for a moment. It was just how close you were. Most humans instinctively shy away from us, are repelled by our alienness. I wasn't expecting you to come so close. The smell of your throat. He stopped short, looking to see if he'd upset me. Okay then, I said flippantly, trying to alleviate the suddenly tense atmosphere. I tucked my chin. No throat exposure. It worked, he laughed. No, really, it was more the surprise than anything else. He raised his free hand and placed it gently on the side of my neck. I sat very still, the chill of his touch a natural warning. A warning telling me to be terrified. But there was no feeling of fear in me. There were, however, other feelings. You see, he said, perfectly fine. My blood was racing, and I wished I could slow it, sensing that this must make everything so much more difficult. The thudding of my pulse in my veins. Surely he could hear it. The blush on your cheeks is lovely, he murmured. He gently freed his other hand. My hands fell limply into my lap. Softly he brushed my cheek, then held my face between his marble hands. Be very still, he whispered, as if I wasn't already frozen, slowly, never moving his eyes from mine. He leaned toward me. Then abruptly, but very gently, he rested his cold cheek against the hollow at the base of my throat. I was quite unable to move, even if I'd wanted to. I listened to the sound of his even breathing, watching the sun and wind play in his bronze hair, more human than any other part of him. With deliberate slowness, his hands slid down the sides of my neck. I shivered, and I heard him catch his breath. But his hands didn't pause as they softly moved my shoulders, and then stopped. His face drifted to the side, his nose skimming across my collarbone. He came to rest, with the side of his face pressed tenderly against my chest, listening to my heart. Ah, he sighed. I don't know how long we sat without moving. It could have been hours. Eventually, the throb of my pulse quieted, but he didn't move or speak again as he held me. I knew at any moment it could be too much and my life could end so quickly I might not even notice. And I couldn't make myself be afraid. I couldn't think of anything except that he was touching me. And then, too soon, he released me. His eyes were peaceful. It won't be so hard again, he said with satisfaction. Was that very hard for you? Not nearly as bad as I imagined it would be. And you? No, it wasn't bad. For me. He smiled at my inflection. You know what I mean. I smiled. Here. He took my hand and placed it against his cheek. Do you feel how warm it is? And it was almost warm. His usually icy skin. But I barely noticed, for I was touching his face. Something I'd dreamed of constantly since the first day I'd seen him. Don't move, I whispered. No one could be still like Edward. He closed his eyes and became as immobile as stone, a carving under my hand. I moved even more slowly than he had, careful not to make one unexpected move. I caressed his cheek, delicately stroked his eyelid, the purple shadow in the hollow under his eye. I traced the shape of his perfect nose and then so carefully his flawless lips. His lips parted under my hand, and I could feel his cool breath on my fingertips. I wanted to lean in, to inhale the scent of him. So I dropped my hand and leaned away, not wanting to push him too far. He opened his eyes, and they were hungry. Not in a way to make me fear, but rather to tighten the muscles in the pit of my stomach and send my pulse hammering through my veins again. I wish, he whispered, I wish you could feel the complexity, the confusion I feel, that you could understand. He raised his hand to my hair and carefully brushed it across my face. Tell me, I breathed. I don't think I can. I've told you on the one hand the hunger, the thirst, that deplorable creature that I am, I feel for you. And I think you can understand that to an extent, though. He half smiled. As you are not addicted to any illegal substances, you probably can't empathize completely. But his fingers touched my lips lightly, making me shiver again. There are other hungers. Hungers I don't even understand. That are foreign to me. I may understand that better than you think. I'm not used to feeling so human. Is it always like this? For me? I paused. Oh, never. Never before this. He held my hand between his. They felt so feeble in his iron strength. I don't know how to be close to you, he admitted. I don't know if I can. I leaned forward very slowly, cautioning him with my eyes. I placed my cheek against his stone chest. I could hear his breath, and nothing else. This is enough, I sighed, closing my eyes. In a very human gesture, he put his arms around me and pressed his face against my hair. You're better at this than you give yourself credit for, I noted. I have human instincts. They may be buried deep, but they're there. We sat like that for another immeasurable moment. I wondered if he could be as unwilling to move as I was. But I could see the light was fading. The shadows of the forest beginning to touch us. And I sighed. You have to go. I thought you couldn't read my mind. It's getting clearer. I could hear a smile in his voice. He took my shoulders and I looked into his face. Can I show you something? He asked, sudden excitement flaring in his eyes. Show me what? I'll show you how I travel in the forest. He saw my expression. Don't worry, you'll be very safe, and we'll get to your truck much faster. His mouth twitched up into that crooked smile so beautiful that my heart nearly stopped. Will you turn into a bat? I asked warily. He laughed, louder than I'd ever heard. Like I haven't heard of that one before. Right, I'm sure you get that all the time. Come on, little coward, climb on my back. I waited to see if he was kidding, but apparently he meant it. He smiled as he read my hesitation and reached for me. My heart reacted. Even though he couldn't hear my thoughts, my pulse gave me away. He then proceeded to sling me onto his back with very little effort on my part. Besides, when in place, clamping my legs and arms so tightly around him that it would choke a normal person. It was like clinging to a stone. I'm a bit heavier than your average backpack, I warned. Ha! He snorted. I could almost hear his eyes rolling. I'd never seen him in such high spirits before. He startled me, suddenly grabbing my hand, pressing my palm to his face and inhaling deeply. Easier all the time, he muttered. And then he was running. And that is where we close the book tonight, on this episode of Down to Sleep. I hope you enjoyed this reading. I will see you next time. Until then, all that's left for me to do is to say thank you and good night.